Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Michael Saunders from Bibendum. How are you, Michael?
I'm good, thanks. And you?
Yeah, really good here, sitting here in Primrose Hill.
Yeah, not sunny Primrose Hill like it normally is.
Is it always sunny here?
Well, generally, when you go to the top of the hill, there's a hell of a view on a good day.
Yeah, I need to have a look at that view. Which way is it?
It's up behind you, and then at the top of the hill, you can see all the way down to Canary Wharf and, of course, where the Olympics are popping up. It's amazing.
I've seen from Canary Wharf, people have said there's Primrose Hill, but
exactly.
Well, I've never actually done it from
while you're here, go and have another look around.
I will have a wee look. But we're not going to be talking about views from Primrose Hill today. We're going to be talking a wee bit about Bibendum.
Good.
And Bibendum are a pretty big wine supplier in the UK.
Well, we are a wine supplier in the UK. I don't think we're that huge in the overall scale of the size of the industry, but we have grown to reasonable significance over the last few years.
Have you been with Bibendum? You're the managing director now, but have you been with Bibendum since the beginning? Or near the beginning?
About 3 months after it started, I was a young man with no mission in life, so they let me through the door, and I haven't found the exit door since then.
What did you start out as?
Well, there are only three of us, so we had the shop in the warehouse, you know, what was the warehouse downstairs, and we all did a bit of everything. So everything from selling on the floor, which we didn't have many sales in those days, to lumping cases and driving the vans.
I read on your website that when a customer came in, everybody hid.
Well, we didn't have very many of them. So in the early days, it was very much a case of when we saw someone walking past, running out, waving a wine list and trying to get their attention. So we spent more time, I think, playing cricket in the space downstairs and occasionally tasting what we had in stock rather enthusiastically, as young people do.
Cool. What was it like? It was originally a shop, wasn't it?
The idea was originally to really be a shop, but along the what is now the Majestic model. So people had to buy 12 bottles, and we had a large array of fine wines that would be incredible to see now, because one of the original owner was a huge collector of fine wines. So we had racks of Lafitte's, Moutons, Lepins, all these fine wines from the classical areas, supported by another large range. But to have access to those sort of wines was pretty unique then. So yeah, we were destined to be a shop.
The original owner, that was Simon Farr, wasn't it?
No, Simon's still here. The original owner, it was very much Simon's idea and his baby, but the original owner was a guy named Chris Collins, whose brother actually still works here today.
Ah, okay. Simon Farr, he's no relation to Farr Vintners?
He's not, no. They've done so well, I think he wishes he was, but no relation at all, just coincidental.
Okay, so you started out as a shop, which is, you know, a lot of people do that.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound like you're particularly inundated with customers.
Well, I think, you know, those days in 1982 was a long time ago. Wine was not the huge consumer product that it is now. So I was being slightly modest. We had we got off the ground pretty quickly. We got a very good entry in the Good Wine Guide straight away. But you know, it wasn't anywhere near the size of business that we are today.
Do you sell to the customer?
We do, yeah, very
you
much
still
so.
Do.
Yeah. It's a small part of our business now, but we generally do that over the telephone and via the web. And we're relaunching our website for private clients in the new year. But really, we're selling to fine wine collectors around the world. So we run all the En Primeur campaigns. We run a large stock of fine wines to try and hang on to the shirt tails, the likes of the brilliant Farr Vintners. And it's still an important part of our business.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but you started selling to restaurants. I know you more as a wholesaler as opposed to a retailer.
Yeah.
Because we actually buy wines from you guys.
Yeah, well,
throughout
I'm aware
business.
Of that. I wish you'd do more of that. Yeah.
No, we buy a reasonable amount. You guys are pretty well organized.
Always more. Thank you.
How did you make the leap? Because going from retail to wholesale, quite different customers with quite different requirements.
Yeah, well, I think what happened to us, we are a quite well-organized company. We've always written business plans, all of which we try to follow. But the world has moved a long way alongside us. So, you know, the story really was that our first restaurant client was Odette's up the road. And we sold them some wine. And then we really got swept up in the mid to late 80s with the restaurant revolution that was going on. I think that was the first break when London really started what's now the gastronomic trend that is, you know, has worldwide appeal. So a lot of the restaurants opening then were looking for a point of difference from what was classically available by the, you know, the booze wholesalers that were there at the time. And we were swept along that tide. And, you know, in the mid-1985, I became the entree division of Bibendum and started to sell our wares to restaurants then.
How big were you by then?
No, it's still pretty small. No, we were probably doing, I don't know, £2-2.5 million a year.
And how many staff?
Just still the three or four of us.
Okay.
It was tiny.
That's a good turnout. Absolutely for tiny. A small group. Cool. And then you've grown the business. What do you find is the most difficult thing dealing with restaurants?
I love dealing with restaurants. I mean, they are varied breed. I don't think there's one thing that's the most difficult. I think the great, to put a positive spin on it rather than a negative spin, I think they're very entrepreneurial. They've got a very clear vision of what they want for their business. I really think that apart from a few exceptions, a lot of them are very willing to be quite open-minded about how to deal with wine. And when they decide who to work with, they put a lot of trust on the supplier to give them the tools for doing wine really well. And that's really exciting because it means we can get very involved with people's business. So I would say to you that we're not simply wine suppliers to the restaurant trade. We get much deeper into their business than that. We get involved with their wineless design because we've got a big design team here. We get very heavily involved in training their staff on not only what the wine is, but how to sell it and make sure that they get really good customer satisfaction. We come up with really good promotional programs for people. So in by extension, we're part of their business, and that's great for me, and it's great for my team to feel a sense of ownership about what our clients are doing.
How do you train people to, I presume it's about upselling the wines and all
well,
that?
Well, no, that upselling is what people say. I think it's, we don't call it upselling, actually. Of course, every business wants to maximize its revenue by customer. That goes without saying. I think what we try and focus on is making sure that the right customer is drinking the right wine at the right time. And not everybody wants to spend more than, you know, than they went in there to spend. What they want to do is spend it wisely. And the great thing you can do in a restaurant, and you can do it in an independent wine shop where you've got people who know what they're talking about, is you can get people to try things that that they might not select for themselves. And if they try that and then go, wow, I really love that, that's great for them, it's great for the customer, it's great for our customer, the restaurant, because the person who's eaten with them or drunk these wines will go away thinking, God, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And it's great for Bibendum because we're selling, you know, a varied, more interesting range of wines.
So you started down the road of restaurants and,
yeah,
and got more and more into restaurants.
Yeah.
You mentioned also that you also supply independent wine,
yep,
merchants now. So you started out being a wine merchant, now you're a supplier too.
Yeah, well, we are the agents for quite a number, as you're aware. We, you know, we have a huge portfolio of wine. In fact, we are brilliant at taking on new agencies and new wines that we think absolutely belong with us. We're not so good at parting with old friends. So our portfolio is enormous now and touches virtually every corner of the globe. That's really exciting. But we do, as part of that, we supply a wide range of different businesses. So from the private clients we talked about, which is small, through to the on-trade, which is more than restaurants. We do a lot of hotels. We do a lot of catering businesses. We're quite big in the sports arena, which is really exciting because I'm a sports nut. So when you go somewhere, you see your wines being sold well. It's very exciting.
Do you get a lot of free tickets?
Never, sadly.
Oh, no.
Actually, that's not true. I get invited here and there. So then we also supply a lot of independent wine businesses around the country. I'm passionate about supporting that because I think if we rely just on the multiple retailers, the availability of really esoteric, interesting wines will by definition get much more reduced. Mm. Having said that, we do have a very thriving business with the multiple retailers as well, which, yep, is an important part of our commitment to the market.
You supply Waitrose, and we're going to talk with James about that later on, but who else do you provide?
To a greater or larger degree, most of the other multiple retailers, with one or two exceptions. So as I said, it's an important part of what we do, and want to do a great deal more of it.
Do you find as you've grown, it's harder to supply quirky small run wines? You know, if you've got a real boutique who hasn't got a lot of volume, and because you're such a big company now, or relatively big, you know, working with the multiples, all that sort of,
yeah,
stuff. Do you find it harder to supply wines?
Well, the answer to that is yes and no. I'm very lucky. I've got a huge group of very passionate people here who love their wines. What we tend to do is find people in various areas of the business who are very passionate about various agencies within our business. So there's a sense of individual responsibility to get them selling themselves and also other groups within the business selling them. So we have highs and lows with it, but no, I mean, we are very, very passionate about the esoteric wines as well as the more volume-orientated wines, and that makes Bibendum what it is, actually.
What's your favourite wine on your list?
Ah, my favourite wine. It's always a difficult one, that. I think the most interesting developments that we brought into our range recently is some of the work that my buyer Stuart's been doing in Spain. Some of the wines, the emerging wines from Spain, are really truly exciting, and they've got that sort of raciness and freshness, be they red or white, that really are great fun. So, you know, moving slightly along the northwest coast from Albarino to Gadello is genuinely exciting. So my family are having to suffer quite a few of those at the moment, which is no hardship, frankly.
No, it's not too bad. Just looking a wee bit at the ownership of the company now, because it started out as, was it a partnership or?
Well, it was originally owned by Chris Collins, and then a group of us bought a management buyout in 1988, and when a number of private individuals came in with us, and that's pretty much remained the same today. So
I thought you had a pretty big investor. Was it Lion Nathan?
No, not Lion Nathan. We have the International Wine Investment Fund have a small minority stake in Bibendum, and they've been with us for a very long time, are very supportive. The balance of the company is owned by private individuals, many of which who work here today. So myself and Simon and Willie and many others. So we passionately believe in the ability to remain a private company, because it means we can be very customer-centric and we can do things that we believe are right for the market. And an example of which, I suppose, is topical given the Olympics coming here next year, is we launched a little business called the Wandering Wine Company. I don't know if you read about that, but having gone to certain sporting events last year, it struck me that the catering's really improved. So you get really good quality food. You get normally a champagne tent, and you always get a beer tent. Nobody's actually trying to sell wine in any sort of really qualitative way. So I found somebody who's an old customer of Bibendum, actually, who was the director of catering at Lord's for 8 years. Really good lad. And we have set up this thing called the Wandering Wine Company, which goes to sporting, cultural, music events in a vintage van, an Airstream or a Citroen H van, flaps down the front, and you get top quality wines served with the best plastic glasses that are available on the market, far better than anything else you see, with a way of keeping it chilled and decanted out of glass, because you're not allowed to take glass into most sporting arenas. And it started, now we're just coming to the end of our first season, and it's going extremely well. So if any of you are heading off to the one day is at the Oval, you'll see us there, I think, is our next outing.
Excellent. Were you there at the...
I wasn't, sadly. I was an avid watcher on TV, and, well done, England boys. It's been fascinating viewing.
Yeah, no. Well, that England won the series 4-0.
Amazing.
I think we're going to release this probably getting close to Christmas, so... But, by then you never quite still, know. You're number one at the moment.
It will still be 4-0 then.
true. Bibendum started in the UK. I read somewhere about a year or two ago that you're starting to explore overseas.
Yeah.
How's that going?
It's got its challenges, frankly, but it's going pretty well. We've got a business in Europe, which is headed up by a man named Lars Venborg, who's, has been known to Bibendum for many years, and it's going well. We represent quite a number of different wineries from around the world throughout the European market, and you know what? It's going well. And the other side of it is we have a business called the Argento Wine Company, which is something that Simon really got going in 1999. That's now operating in, I think it's just under 60 markets around the world. So that does give us a sort of flavour of what's going on in other markets around the world.
Argento, I would associate it with an Argentinian brand.
It is. Yeah, very much Argentinian. That's all it is.
Yeah.
But we are the majority owner of that business. And that is going extremely well. And we launched it in the States a couple of years ago. And, it's really interesting stuff.
What are you doing in Europe? Is it more wholesale? Is it retail?
No, we're selling to the monopoly markets in Northern Europe. We sell to wine businesses in Europe, be they wholesalers or predominantly retailers.
Okay, so you're going to, say, Finland or Sweden,
exactly,
and saying, we've got these wines. Do you want to list them? And all that sort of stuff. Is that operated out of here? Or
it's not. No, Lars operates that out of France.
One of the things about Bendham that is different, well, not so much different, but, you know, it's like the Avis, we always try harder, is your trade tasting is always normally pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, you spend a lot of time thinking about the design.
And money.
I'm sure. But you've always themed them quite well.
Yeah.
And they're normally sort of a highlight on the trade tasting circuit if you do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
How does that flow through? Because, you know, you look around the office and it's quite quirky. You know, you seem to come out, try and portray a quirky image.
Well, it is quirky, not for the sake of it. I think that Simon's philosophy, very much from the start of Bendham all those years ago, was to make wine very approachable. Because for a lot of consumers, and even professionals who are in the sort of catering world, wine can be quite intimidating. So we've wanted to make it, A, very qualitative, so everything we do is really good. And we wanted to execute the way we run our business as to the best of our ability and always striving for more. But we wanted to do it with a sense of fun and a sense of passion. So those tastings are a really important part of our calendar. We're very proud of what we've achieved. It's been, you know, well noted in the wine world. And it is, I think, according to all our producers who do these things everywhere, it is almost pretty unique that nobody manages to get a day that well attended with so many people having so much fun. It's, you know, a huge amount of work to make it operate like that. And it is a little bit irreverent because we want to attract some attention. It's a tasting, yes, but it's also marketing. And if people get to see where our thoughts are, we believe that is a very important part of our Bibendum's annual calendar. And marketing is a huge part of what we do because it enables us to sell not only more wine but more interesting wine because we give the mechanics by which our customers can actually sell better wine, and that's been proven over and over again. So the tasting is sort of probably at the apex of the triangle of what we do, but there's a lot underneath that. Our whole social media strategy is roped into that, so we are, and we normally set up a sort of micro site for our tastings, but our blog is the sixth most read wine and food blog in the UK now. Well, you know, why is that? Because I think we get people interested in what we're doing.
You have pushed social media quite a bit. We had Ryan Opaz on the show a wee while ago.
Yeah.
And he's always seems to be at your events doing some sort of presentation or something along those lines. Is social media a key part?
It's absolutely fundamental. It is absolutely fundamental because if you look at what is available in the printed media for wine, it's vastly reduced, and I'm sure you've heard this a number of times. There aren't many nationals who give much exposure to wine to any significant degree. Yeah. So that combined with the fact that the emerging wine drinker is very acquainted to the social media side, personally I'm probably the wrong side of that generation gap, It is clear that when we get social media right, it does have a huge impact on not only brand Bibendum, but more importantly, we align a lot of work we do with our customers. So if we're doing a special promotion with let's take a gastro pub in Camden, they're doing something special, we can push that through our social media, they can push it through their social media, and, you know, it creates some noise and some impact.
The people who subscribe to you guys, because you do focus on the trade, is it the trade who tie into your social media?
Yeah, pretty much, I think, yes. It's restaurateurs, hoteliers, barmen, people who are interested in the industry at large. There is a huge blogging community within the Wine and Food Network now, and we try and work quite closely with them as well, so they can become aware of what's going on in the wine world.
Do you do much with, say, the European Wine Bloggers Conference? That's Ryan's.
We do, yes. And Gareth, who you know, does do specific tastings for the bloggers on quite a regular basis. So hopefully our traction with them is reasonably good. But they're a much better judge of that than I, frankly.
One of the things about Bibendum is you do win a lot of awards. You know, you go to the International Wine Challenge or International Wine.
Yeah, we're keeping our fingers crossed for a couple of weeks' time, yeah.
Yeah, what's it's the big...
Well, it's the International Wine Challenge, you know, and, you know, luckily we've been shortlisted for a couple of awards, and, you know, I hope we come back with something.
Excellent. You were saying earlier that you've been ISO 14001.
Yeah, just last week, yeah.
I've always thought ISO was a lot of paper, but in your toilet you've got a thing saying, don't print the paper.
Well, we... Okay, now I'm going to be a little bit honest now. A couple of years ago, maybe 3 years ago, a a number of my team came to me and said, Michael, you're not taking the whole green emerging, the whole environmental awareness seriously enough for a company like Bibendum. And I listened to them, and we set up we love labeling things here, being a marketing company. So we set up a team called Vivid. And Vivid Group really started to get Bibendum into shape in terms of how we deal with our environmental impact, and it's had enormous success. Actually, we've moved a hell of a lot of our wines to lightweight bottles. You won't find any bins in the office. Everything gets recycled. We have reduced the invoices and statements we send out on paper to virtually zero. We have got our new warehousing contractor is on the page, our shippers on the same page. We work closely with all our producers to see what they do in terms of their environmental impact. And we have been quite well awarded for that, and the latest one being ISO 14001, which is great, actually. And
what is 14001?
It is the Environmental Impact Award that the company is doing everything in its power to minimize its impact on the environment. So, you know, I'm thrilled. We got a couple of CSR awards last year. We got, in 2010, we got the Green Business of the Year from the drinks business. And I think that's great. Well, it's great for my team. The Vivid team who pull all this together, but also for the many young people that work here. They care, as do I, very deeply about what we do for the environment. And it's something I've continued to invest in, even though the wine business has been pretty tough for the last couple of years.
You mentioned that you put together this Vivid team. How's that structured, though? Is it like a cross-functional team?
No, it's volunteers. It's headed up by Amanda Wilshire, who is training manager. And it's people who are passionate, wanted to volunteer to do it. So it's rather like our charity team. It's purely self-elected.
And how does that work, though? Is it just you give people a bit of time to do?
I give them time and pretty much a green light to do anything that they think is applicable. Obviously, they pass it by me if it has any significant impact, but I've yet to say no to any of their ideas. Same with charity. We started a few years back to vote on a charity we should support every year. And that has enormous impact because it means we put all our energies behind one charity. I've actually just started giving everyone in the business one paid day to work for charity. Currently, it's MS and has been it will have been at the end of this year for 2 years. So it means that, you know, we're now 240 people on here. They've got 240 days free at their disposal to use for charitable activity, which is quite something actually for a charity. And we raise many tens of thousands every year. And all that, again, is done because the people volunteer to do it.
Excellent. I think we'll wrap it up there, Michael. Thank you very much.
Oh, well, thanks for coming to see us. It's great to see you here.
Not a problem.
And go for a walk up the hill.
I will.